The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Good evening, Britain. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Hold your insulting tongue and mark my words well.
How about this rumor that you are moving higher than Mr. Stark?
Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Comic Book Chronicles. And the one thing I normally remember to ask before the show, I totally forgot to ask. So while Agent 70 thinks about what we start with, I'm going to introduce myself. My name is Roddy Katz, and you can find me at Roddy Katz on Twitter. You can also find me at News Nerds Need on Twitter. You can also find me at CB Caps on Instagram. Jeez Louise.
Uh-oh.
Excuse me.
Lozenges are inbound, I hope.
Oh, shoot. I don't have any on me. I got apple juice, so it's all good. And that voice you just heard was our man in Brooklyn, the man behind the sound effects, one Agent underscore 70 on Twitter and Instagram.
Oh, it's been that kind of day, folks, so we switch it up a little bit.
No! Sleep to Brooklyn!
I totally mean that for today, too.
Well, hopefully we will get you out of here so that you can get some kind of sleep. I don't know. Wait, what's the weather up there? Because I know it's been like bad weather in a lot of places.
It dropped considerably over the last couple of days. It is now 21 degrees outside.
Have y'all gotten snow yet? Or
31 degrees outside. No, that might be further north of me here in the city. It's just cold.
Actually, it's further south to you too. Yeah, that's the further south to you also because I hear Virginia's gotten some, so...
This is crazy, man. Like, it's going to be literally 47 degrees on Saturday and 50 degrees on Sunday. Come on now.
Yeah, it's kind of this. Hey, global warming, tis the thing. And that's been your Comic Book Chronicles weather report for the week.
That's true. I wish we had a weather introduction, you know?
I was about to say close enough. That kind of works for a couple of situations, actually. So, and not with us tonight. One PC and underscore dirt, pop culture net, the pop culture network.com, and his umbrella sites therein. And also, he's on Byte, as something or other,
as something that sounds like comic reviews,
CMCRVWS. You can go there over there, or you choose not to. Either way, it's up to you. Such a thing. And the not with us tonight also is the Osiris of this ish one, Tim DOGG98. You can find him at that on Twitter. You can also find him on The Click Nation on Twitter. That's DKLIQNATION at theclicknation.com. CB Cron, which is the Comic Book Chronicles Twitter account, and also Comic Book Resources, where he's over there writing his face off, and I don't know why I don't have that in the lineup, but that's weird. He will be providing some at least one of the articles that is in the news. You can find this here podcast on the, I keep wanting to say the phrase that pays, and it's kind of ridiculous given that's a podcast network, but podcast of place, whatever. The Comic Book it should be ours, but it's not. Coast of the Podcast Network, that's where you'll find us, cspn.us.
Do it today.
What in the world was I just looking at? But that was kind of weird. You can also find us at your podcast perusal place of choice, whether it be Google Play, Apple iTunes, aka Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and the Coast of the Podcast Network's SoundCloud page. We are going to get into the comics of the week, you know what? I will start us off and then I'll get the one that we both have read.
Sure.
Since your list seems to be a long...
My list is abnormally short this week.
Yeah, this is actually shocking because normally you would average at least get five books.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's been that kind of week, ladies and gentlemen.
And normally we would have read a couple of things, because this was actually a pretty good week this week.
There was a massive amount of books out this week.
Yeah, so. And a couple of really good ones too, personally. Right. But and I guess we will start off with Guardians of the Galaxy number 2. And I need to pull my sheet up because I totally need to write this stuff down while I'm doing this. Sorry, folks. This is going to be one of those nights.
Oh, no.
Nights. All right. So, Guardians of the Galaxy number 2. So, 87 hasn't read this yet, so I'm trying not to spoil. And I guess this will be a running thing with the stuff that I know he would have read by now. So basically, this is the prologue. Well, this is the prologue to that this last arc. But it starts off with, I guess, the incoming arc that was dealing with something back on Earth with one Wyatt Wingfoot. And some goings on that he happens to come back home to his wherever he's from, that escapes me right about now, into a dispute that seems to open up into something bigger with a classic that seems to be involving a classic Fantastic Four villain.
What book are we talking about?
Fantastic. What? No. Well, I'm sorry. Guess what? We're starting with Fantastic Four number 19. Not. Right. I just confused because I'm sitting here. I'm looking at my notes and I'm like, wait, I said Guardians of the Galaxy, and I'm sitting right here reading off. I'm sitting here reading the wrong one. I'm like,
what's Wyatt Wingfoot doing in this book?
And all right, you know what? Hey, a lot of things have changed. He could have joined the Guardians. You don't know.
That's funny.
So yeah, it's Fantastic Four number 4 number 19. And my apologies. I told you it's gonna be one of those nights. But yeah, we start that off in something, and in the beginning, it kind of looks like a situation is a little untenable. But then we cut to the Fantastic Four back out in space, where they're on the planet of Spire, and is at the end of their battle with the Overseer. But it's not over yet, because apparently there is still one of two things that you would expect to happen, given the revelations of this arc. To happen, and one of them happens in this book, which made it a potential click of the week for me, having to do with Reed and the Overseer, and a thing that I expected to happen with someone that they met on Spire does happen, thus adding to Johnny Storm's legacy, let's say, which that sounds more than what it actually is, but you know, even when this arc first started, we kind of said, hey, there was going to be something was going to happen between somebody else that they meet, and sure enough it does. So but yeah, so they basically kind of clean up the mess on Spire and then head back home to where we cut back to Earth to Wyatt Wingfoot and that whole situation, which seems to have been resolved. Well, partially resolved, because there's still something left over, and there's trying to figure out what to do with it, since they couldn't get in contact with the Fantastic Four at the time, but they decided to try it again. And I guess whatever goes into the next issue will be what that is. So It was a cool issue for one particular fact that I would not will spoil, but it was a good couple of pages, specifically for that alone. But the rest of the book was also decent. It's like, so we're basically coming out of one arc going into the other, which was cool. But now I guess we'll get into Guardians of the Galaxy real quick, and so I get the right notes. Sorry, I'm getting the right notes. So, as I say in my notes, basically the team starts to collect themselves after everything that happens the last issue prior to this. They have picked up which you already know what happened in the last issue, so you can pretty much can kind of guess at least a thing that that's going to happen, or that is potentially happening in this book with someone they meet up with that has to do with the situation. And I'm speaking to Agent 70 because...
I mean, we know who came up at the end of the last issue.
Exactly, and he still comes up in this issue, and, you know... You know what tends to happen in this, these kind of cases, and it seemed like it is going that route. However, the team pretty much completes the mission, but not without some things happening. Let's just say, which, as I say in my notes, I was like, second issue, huh? And they're already kind of there's already a switch up, or there's already a change up, so. But it's still pretty good. And apparently there's, I don't know, there was a certain tarot reading kind of section in the book that was seeming like that sounds like it's basically foreshadowing stuff that's coming. Those things tend to do. But who knows? I think, well, you can kind of, once you read that part, you can kind of at least glance at one or two of them. But one of them's kind of eludes you. And I will go ahead and say that the creative team on this is one Al Ewing on the script, Juan Cabal on art, that's what we're doing, Federico Blee on the colors, and BC's Corey Pettit is on the letters.
Yeah, I was about to say you left that out on FF, I think.
Yeah, I did, and I'm about to go back in and rectify that right now, right. Because it is Dan Slott on the script, as we all knew that part. And Rod Reyes, Slots. I'm thinking of another book now. Dan Slott's writer, Sean Isaacs is the artist. Marco Menez and Erica Arsenega, mm-hmm. Color artist, and VC's Joe Caramanga on lettering for the FF.
All right. Let me bring up the big number one of the week.
Yeah.
I'm referring to Wolverine number one. It basically breaks down into two full comics in one issue. The first kickoff story by Benjamin Percy, written by Benjamin Percy, art by Adam Kubert, color by Frank Martin, and the letters by VC's Corey Pettit. It starts us off with a story based around some of the illicit trade that has popped up as a result of the wonder drugs that are being produced by Krakoa, and a pretty interesting story that comes out of that. This is definitely in the vein of classic Wolverine solo adventures that start out based in X-Men stuff, but slowly lets him branch out and do... And kind of perform on the solo tip. Mm. It also establishes the background of the illicit drug trade that has come about, that has arisen in the wake of these miracle drugs that are being produced by Krakoa.
Does it play into the stuff coming out of the Marauders?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Not necessarily, because it kind of assumes that some of the illicit drug trade is coming out of bootleggers and or counterfeiters.
Gotcha.
Not necessarily just thieves. And there is some element of that, but it's a part of the, you know, it's a part of the just a small part of the overall story. We have the introduction of a new character and a new strain of characters that I guess have come about in the wake of Krakoan gates popping up around the world and mutants coming in and out of them. We also have in this first half of the issue, a mysterious new antagonist who seems to have mysterious mental powers, and we're left with a minor cliffhanger. I guess it's a major cliffhanger, but it wasn't that effective. I can say that the second story Believe it or not, I can literally call it a second story. It's also written by Benjamin Percy with art by Victor Bogdanovich, color by Matt Wilson, and lettered again by VC's Core Pettit. The second story is a little bit more, I don't want to say interesting. It grabs you a little bit more because it involves an old antagonist that debuted in X-Men number 4. That is the second volume of X-Men number 4. It is minor spoilers. One Arcady, and I forget his last name, but better known as Omega Red. And as everyone knows, the code on Krakoa is that all mutants are welcome, no matter what side of the moral spectrum they happen to reside in. So, you know, obviously there's some issues with Omega Red coming in, but that Wolverine has with him coming in, but there is a side quest that Omega Red kind of sends Wolverine on, and that leads us to, you know, kind of in a very roundabout way, a backdoor vampire story. And we know that that has been a running theme in Avengers in the early part of this volume, as well as probably something that's going to become more popular as the lead up to the new Blade movie, which is still a while away, but they do have to lay some sort of groundwork for the vampires and the vampire nation having rebuilt their base. So that's where the second story lies. Overall, I thought it was pretty effective. I like the fact that we literally got two Wolverine comics, not exactly for the price of one, because cover price is $8.
I was going to ask, was it, was the price, and was it like double size?
It was roughly double, yeah. Exactly. I didn't do a page count, but it's pretty much two comics in under one cover.
Sure.
So, you know, same writer, just different creative teams. My understanding is that the artists at least will be rotating. So that was my understanding prior to this issue coming out.
Right.
So I anticipate that to be the case. Overall, this is a solid start. I say it's a potential click of the week just because I really like that Benjamin Percy is infusing this character story, who some would say has had way too much exposure and maybe is kind of run out of tricks for maybe a one trick or even a two trick pony. But I think it will be entertaining, and I think that he's really infused the story with some energy, and he's got a way of writing Wolverine that really makes him interesting and appealing without making him always some of the classic tropes that we've seen, especially during the Claremont era of Wolverine. It's definitely something a little different.
Okay, that's good. I'm glad it didn't, because I know you've been, like I said, you've been looking forward to this, so I'm glad it didn't disappoint.
Definitely not disappointed. Like I said, it's literally two stories. I was wondering what was taking me so long to read this over lunch. And I was like, wait, there's literally two books in here.
Wait, so did it just like blend into one, or did it like do the classic?
No,
it
stopped and started, right. It stopped and started in like the middle of the book.
Classic backup story stuff, yeah.
Right, exactly. I anticipated it to be backup stories that I could breeze through, but sure. It wasn't.
But apparently he's seeding something for a little while though. Okay,
exactly,
gotcha.
Exactly.
Well, going from that, I will go ahead and finish up the mutant books. And then I guess we can get to that last one you did and then go into rapid fire.
Sure.
Marauder is number 8. So we pick up let me get the creative team out the way. It's Jerry Duggan writer, Stefano Caselli is the artist. Edgar Delgado, Coloradus, VC's Corey Pettit on the letters. And we pick up on one of the threads that's been kind of left dangling from last issue. Although we don't start with what happened on the last page of the last issue, because that comes in later on in the book. We basically see... this is going to be a minor spoiler for you, Agent 70, but you kind of knew it was coming. So they basically find out what happens to Kate.
Right. I had heard about this.
Mm-hmm. And which, you know, there was been a confrontation between Storm and Emma Frost, if you pardon the pun, brewing because of the cover. Doesn't necessarily go off like that, and doesn't necessarily go off in the way that you would have expected it to. The reason kind of makes itself clear already. But outside of that, without giving too much away, we see them start to kind of deal with some of that. This is kind of one of the few times that I've seen Emma actually concerned, if not emotional, about a thing. not since Scott died. So, and you know, Emma Frost, that takes a whole lot. So, yeah, there's going to be that. Bobby, and there's an article we'll get to probably later on that sheds a little light on Iceman, because he kind of takes some things into his own hands and kind of goes ham for a brief second. But that being said, you know, this was a pretty good issue for what it was. Like I said, there's still a little bit to kind of go through and kind of parse out, and like the part that we're really kind of concerned about is probably going to be coming up, but it looks like they are kind of drawing that out. But also, there's another side of this where Sebastian Shaw kind of brings a couple of more people into his stable, into the Black Chamber, some would say. And it is some very familiar long time folks to the part of the world, which I don't think we've seen these folks in a minute. I'll put it that way. And then we found out what happened to Lockheed at the end of it. So that is that for Marauders. Like I said, it's kind of hard for me to kind of go through this stuff knowing Agent 71 is going to read the stuff, but I don't want to spoil it.
Sure.
So, you know.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, you know, you would do the same for me. And next up is New Mutants number 7. I'm just going to go ahead and say that this is my potential click of the week for me. I love the fuck out of this. I love this issue. I really do. It had me scared for a minute, like I was saying before the show, but I really enjoyed
it. Are we back with the OG?
We are back with the OG. In fact, matter of fact, after I get to the creative team, I'll talk about that for just a second. Jonathan Hickman is writer, Rod Reyes is artist, VC's Travis Lanham is the letterer, and Tom Muller on design, I guess. I'm not sure what that one's about, but I will say there is
all the X stuff. Sure.
Text pages and the
exactly.
The sure. To which there is a couple of that in here, but it starts off with, you know, as the OGs have been doing, with Roberto doing the narration, and I would dare say he not only breaks the fourth wall, they kind of shatter it.
Mm-hmm.
But you could kind of tell, you know, even from that, Hickman is kind of having fun with this book. And it even goes a little bit further than that, like I said, without giving too much away. But then we basically do get back with them and their mission in the Shira space, and that kind of gets taken care of after cleaning up some loose ends, like early on, which kind of made me feel like this book was ending, and I was like, oh no, because the way it was reading, it was like they're kind of running through a couple of things like pretty fast, and I'm not sure how to feel about that. But there's still a couple of sections of action, a couple of other things, you know, that go on during the course of this issue. But we find, you know, we like I said, we get an ending to the whole Shi'ar thing, and you know, the New Mutants mission to bring Sam back home has a resolution to it. And don't read my notes, by the way, because it will kind of spoil it on a little bit.
Already.
So, yeah, something's happened in this issue that comes out of this. And I don't know whether it's going to feed into Empire or not. I doubt it. But it definitely, I assume, is going to feed into Mutantdom at some point. And I don't know if part of that was calculated in the end, because it kind of feels like that. But at the same time, you know, it just so happens to happen the way it does. And like I said, it was a good fun read, and I enjoyed every second of it. And if you like D&D, there's something a little bit in there for you. In one of the, speaking of the text pages, there's a little bit something there for you, which is kind of cool.
Okay.
And with that, we will go on to, I guess, the book that we both read.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Jane Foster Valkyrie, or Valkyrie Jane Foster, whichever one you choose to be, except for it only goes one way. I prefer to call it Jane Foster Valkyrie. That's just me.
That's just the way the design looks.
Basically. But that is not the way they...
Right, the way it's solicited, I think, yeah. It comes in under V. This is issue number 8 of this series. I'm glad that it is chugging along. This book is features the debut of the new co-writer of the book. So the writers on this book are Jason Aaron and Torun Grunbeck.
Which means to love Thor. So she has a dope-ass name already off the bat.
Exactly. The art on this book is by Cafu. Welcome back, Cafu.
Yes.
The color artist being Jesus Abertov. And letters by VC's Joe Sabino. So this is the kickoff of a brand new story arc, you know, involving the new co-writer of the book, as Al Ewing had to step away for other things. And
such as Guardians.
Right. And we start with some backstory, some interweaving of actual Norse myth, I believe, into back into the Thor books, not even into, because it's always been there, obviously, sure. But back into the Thor books. And what, you know, it feels like a fun kickoff story that has a very dark undertone.
Mm-hmm.
And
it also feels like they're basically ripping the Band-Aid off of her secret identity.
Exactly. And I can tell that they are both, you know, advancing Jane Foster's story and at the same time having a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
With Ms. Grunbeck's debut. So, you know, there's lots of catch up on where we last left these characters, or at least Jane Foster and her, what was it, the paramedic friend, I believe that is?
Yes, Lisa, how to run something like that.
Right. Yeah. So, but yeah, she's one of the supporting cast, and we, you know.
She's not a paramedic, she works for damage control now, but that's whatever. She was a paramedic, yeah.
Right. That's how I remember her. So, okay. Right. So that being said, you know, we kind of jump straight into the evil plot that's going on after, you know, a little bit of setup that involves Norse myth, and a team up ensues. And I really like some of the writing in the team up.
Yes.
Because it's, you know, it deals directly with some of the team up tropes. It addresses them and just moves things along very quickly. It's a lot of fun. I found myself grinning just reading it.
Mm. Yeah. So, and also bears in that this is set in a particular time because it does not address certain current events, which looks like if you look at the back of the page after. The letters page or whatever seems like that might get addressed next issue. I don't know.
Well, possibly, because the cover for this issue seems out of time as well.
Right.
Out of place, because it seems to be, it seems to depict Thor in a certain place, but the Thor that we get in the pages of the book seems to be from a time immediately prior.
Right. So, a matter of fact, yeah, even with the team up, because there, someone gets addressed there who we know is in, not in the same place as he's in currently.
Right. So ultimately, you know, this seems to occupy a different time and space than where we consider, you know, I guess current Marvel continuity to be right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we have to, you know, sort of see how this all fits in later on, I guess.
Right.
It also gives the, you know, the new creative team, you know, the new co-writer a little bit of room to have some fun and play with some of the toys in the sandbox.
Right. Yeah, and probably get her, you know, probably in a couple of issues to get her back onto into the current continuity.
Exactly.
But yeah, so I guess this is speculation on my part, because of that beginning part kind of makes me wonder if that's how that would explain how Grim Reaper came back.
Possibly.
Because it does, it would definitely be an easy explanation for that. And so to what end, and whoever that was, you know, implementing that, you know, we still don't know, but we know somebody's right behind something. We know, you know,
right,
it's got something to do with the, basically it's got something to do with Thor and Norse mythology and stuff, that kind of stuff. So there is that. And though there was also a mention of a small Kree incursion that Jane said she had to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And actually even a mention of her, you know, her and Sam's kind of
on and again, off again,
because yeah, I don't have a halfway relationship, even though right, he was with Misty Knight also at the time. So that's also confusing, but that's, it is what it is.
Right.
But yes, that's
he's running around as Thor. So,
right. So some of that kind of comes back. I mean, I was kind of wondering if that small Kree incursion has anything to do with the upcoming Empire thing, but I don't think so. That's just cause something, you know, it's not like right, there aren't Kree around or whatever the case may be. But that's
right, we don't know if it was just a throwaway line just to kind of set things, you know, right, in proper place, as although not setting them in the proper time.
Right. But sometimes it's like, you know what, there's, you know, that's something when they throw it in there, that's kind of sort of specific with a specific name. Mm-hmm. You kind of wonder, but it doesn't necessarily have to mean anything.
Right.
So but there is that.
I was going to say it was fun to see Thor and Valkyrie team up.
It was, work. Yes. It also almost also felt like that there could have been something, not necessarily rekindling between them, but definitely kind of rebonding.
It was definitely well written.
Yeah.
It was well written because it didn't jump to any conclusions. It didn't jump to a place where we would be surprised. It right, felt like two characters really reconnecting.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not rekindling yet, but definitely reconnecting.
Yeah, yeah. Like there was definitely a kind of a rebonding between them. So, like whether that bears out later on, well, I guess given what happens at the end of this, you know, story, something's at the end of this issue, something's going to happen, but not necessarily to that end. You know,
right.
So, and actually, it kind of made me funny. So, I will say this. So, there is even it says on the cover, it's like Valkyrie fights the Anti-Life. And I'm thinking, wait, so she's fighting Darkseid? Is the Anti-Life equation coming into this?
That would be funny.
That's just like, oh, and matter of fact, I even said in my notes, so it was like, okay, so the Anti-Life equation was over in Marvel at the whole time. That's why Darkseid
right, couldn't, find it. Couldn't find it, right?
Yeah. So, but
the other side of the source wall is the Marvel universe.
Exactly. Uh-huh. That old man, that would be funny. That's probably how Amalgam could come back.
Right.
Ooh. I think we wrote a story. We may have come across the story to bring back
the Amalgam. I thought that was part of the Amalgam story, but I could be wrong.
The source wall?
Yeah, like some breach of the source wall. But anyway, I'm not even going to try to figure that out. That was so long ago.
Yeah, that was a while ago, and I haven't seen Hide No Hair of those comics in ages, so I don't know. And
they're sitting in a long box in my drawer boxes.
I was about to say, there's somewhere where the Ark of the Covenant is, because they're definitely not reprinting as Jokers.
Right.
But anyway, that is that, and that's the story for another time. I guess if there we well, I guess we don't have anything. I guess you've ran through yours.
No, exactly. I read the grand total, although it really felt like three books with two Wolverine issues. Right. It's two books for me this week. So I came in. If you bet the under, you won.
I don't know. I think a lot of people lost because they figured you would have, you know, like just like I said prior, you usually kind of go, you have a limit. You definitely have a
it's usually in the 5 to 6 range.
So. Right. Your par is usually a 5.
Right. It's true.
So
it's true. All right, well let me spin it up and you can go through your rapid fire.
Oh no. Okay, go for it. In fact, I was trying to sit here and screw up the freaking page. Dang it.
Oh no.
Sorry, folks. Let me get this last one. 2, 3. Because I apparently read, I think I read both of our shares of books. I think that's how I'm gonna. I don't know. It was a couple of hours where I didn't have anything to do, and I was so weirdly enough I was tired, but for some strange reason, and yet I still read some mess. So I don't know how tired I actually was. And it actually was, like I was saying earlier before the show, it was a good week for books, I will dare say.
I agree. So
you have a few, I think, personally, decent ones to get to, but then I think there's also some stuff that I read that you don't read. So at the end of it, which, did you say you were going to get Bitterroot?
Yeah, I still pull it.
Okay, yeah, because it came back this week also. But we'll get into that in a second. And I will go ahead and start off with Atlantis Attacks number 2. And I'm kind of wish you had read this because there was a part of this book that I was like, wait, is that a repeat or is that going back to the past? So basically, it feels like it almost feels like once you read this whole thing out or at least once you get to the point to a certain point, it's like, oh, well, they just resolved this whole thing, and that's just it. Like, this is just a whole 2 issues and one and going done. Nope, they put a wrinkle in on it, which I guess we could have expected, but I won't get to what that is. So, and also put it into my notes, like, Jimmy Woo did something that Roberto Da Costa did, like, years ago, and I didn't even think about that, but it is what it is. So Jimmy comes back with the old agents of Atlas and basically starts giving out orders, you know, to both teams, to which, you know, Amazeus is like, so you're just going to come in here and do that. And that's what we're supposed to just fall in line. Like, yep. So they kind of do. But Amadeus being on his stuff, you know, kind of has his backup, you know, kind of has his team backing up for him and kind of watching out for themselves while this plan of theirs to, which I think was mentioned last issue, so I may or may not get to deal with the dragon situation in Pan, basically, because you already know about that, so I don't have to necessarily skirt around that. And they do come up with a plan to deal with that, and that goes off seemingly without a hitch until it gets to a certain point. And weirdly enough, it kind of brings back something that happened last issue. Which when you read that part, you may or may not, you know, go with me on this. Cause I was like, wait, this happened in the first issue. Why is this happening again? But it made me think like it was a time skip back to this moment, but I don't think it was. It was just like, it just happened again. So like I said, once you get to that part, you may know what I'm talking about. Amazing Mary Jane number 5. So this is the penultimate issue of this book. I thought this was the last issue for some strange reason, but it's not.
I think it was supposed to be, and I think it's actually because of popular demand been extended into a regular series. This is as per the Marvel Pull List podcast.
Oh, really? Okay, that part I didn't know, because I was like, wait, this is supposed to be 5 issues, but yeah, and I hadn't looked fully into the solicit, but I did see there was definitely a number 6 coming.
Right. So I don't know if it's a full ongoing, but they definitely have produced another issue past what we initially thought would be the original run.
Right, which makes sense because I guess, well, with how this ended, they could have ended it there and, you know, would have been all right. because, you know, her whole thing was like, hey, she was doing this movie with Mysterio about his life. It's basically the Joker, but Mysterio's doing it. And the Savage Six was kind of bothering them. And they show back up in this one and get dealt with quite handily, by the way, which is kind of funny. At least up until a certain point, because, you know, there's only so much one person can do, you know, with this superpowered group of villains. Some would say, you know, I think the superior foes would probably have better luck, but, you know, that's just me. But anyway, but like I said, there was a good bit of action in this book. So Mary Jane's finished her part of the movie, but she stuck around anyway because she wanted to kind of hang out with the cast and help them break it down and do it all. So and then that's when other stuff started happening, and she has to intervene so that they can finish the last scene of the movie, which does. And then it kind of goes off from there, which, like I said, if they had ended it right there, then, you know, it would have been cool. But apparently, since there is going to be another issue of this book or possibly more, then I guess we'll see where that takes, which is cool. Cause this has been a pretty good book so far. So I'm not mad to see more of it. Teen Titans number 39. So the team's attempt to bring back Jen brings in another unexpected participant. And let me see. I don't know how deep your DC knowledge goes. Let me see if you know this name. Jakeem Thunder.
Wow. There used to be, I think there were twins, Thunder and Lightning, but I don't remember their names.
No, isn't that Black Lightning's the nieces?
No, there's another set. There was another set. Is pre-crisis, though. So,
and actually, I meant to look this up, but yeah, some kid named Jakeem. Wow, and for some strange reason, Google's like I know who you're looking for
because they're listening.
Well, that's probably true because you can see, yep, the full origin of DC Comics is Jakeem Thunder from like 3 years ago. So this is basically this kid named Jakeem Thunder. I'm not really big on DC lore, so you have to forgive me. But basically, it's a young black dude who it looks like he's associated with Shazam. But also, he has a genie, which kind of plays into the storyline because like I said, the team's kind of trying to save their genie friend Jen. So they concoct this plan to go to deal with her brother to try to get her release, but that kind of doesn't go as planned, which brings in this Jakeem Thunder, who also has another sibling of theirs, and he's basically, you know, the older brother kind of collecting rings and or power in a Thanos type fashion. And then some other stuff goes on with Jen and the team, and now they're like, okay, well, we got to go help her again, even though she doesn't want our help type situation. And now they got this other dude in tow for their next part of their plan. So it was all right. This is one of those easy reads that I was kind of talking about. So it's still entertaining. Justice League number 41. And all I will say is that round one of the Justice League versus Eradicator doesn't go that well. And it sucks who the sacrificial lamb is. Because I know you're going to read this. That's all you need to know. Superman's pal, Jimmy Olsen, number 8. Jimmy Olsen dies, and all of a sudden there are, stop me if you heard this one, 4 more Jimmy Olsen the likes. Ah. Which actually, if you go back to,
Pedro. Kill one, 4 more appear.
Exactly, you know. Yes. So they really lay into the reign of the Supermans thing in this book. Like, you know, this is Matt Fraction, so it has his humor all up and through it, and there's a lot going on in his book. It didn't give him a blank, but it's still kind of fun. Like I said, and other craziness that happens in the books, because that's just not the only thing. That's just start of the issue, and then some other things kind of happen during the course of this issue. He-Man and the Masters of the Multiverse, number 4. So finally get to Filmation He-Man. That is the He-Man we all know and love from the 1980s, if you're of a certain vintage, in cartoon form. He finally shows up. that version shows up in this book along with Man-at-Arms and Orko. And it even starts off with the obligatory PSA that usually happens at the end of the show. And they even allude to it like later on in the story. It's like, hey, they just spend all day giving each other lessons on how to be good or something like that. So that was kind of funny during the course of the issues. That which is also kind of made this a particular click of the week for them to decide. But there's still other stuff that is going on with this book is going on. Clicker Game He-Man finally gets a name. And if you don't know what I'm talking about there, we'll talk about it later. Because this book deals with a lot of different versions of E-Man, they kind of take it a few different places. It's kind of interesting. Keldor is wrestling with his potential destiny in part of this. Because basically there is a Skeletor who's not necessarily Skeletor. He's more of a, what if Skeletor had a good side in the multiverse and this is him? So they kind of recruit him to help fight against the anti-He-Man, you know, and to save the multiverse with these other He-Men. But even he's kind of wrestling with us, you know, with what he has been told his destiny is going to be. So there's a lot of that in there. We'll see how that plays out. Transformers number 17. A Titan is awakened and heads to the moon. Blaster shows up. Cyclone kind of has a decision. He's got folks in his head and he's trying to make a decision. Ain't no telling what's going on with that. And there's some Titan on Titan violence, which sadly ends in one of them getting shut down. I am still enjoying this book, and I feel like it's kind of reining in on where this takes place, because it seems like it's like a prequel to the Transformers that we know in the Great War. You know, it's just basically stuff leading up to the founding of the Decepticons. It looks like that's where that's going. The weird thing about this book is that we see some familiar Transformers, but we also see familiar forms of these Transformers. And since this is supposed to be, presumably this is Cybertron before they came to Earth, but yet some of the forms you see are Earth looking forms, and that's kind of weird. So, but I don't know. Maybe there's a reason for that, or maybe, I don't know. Bitterroot number 6. I am so happy this is back. I totally forgot what was going on in the book, unfortunately, but I did remember a couple of things in the reading of this book. So Andro comes, which looks like there's going to be the next big bad of the next this coming arc. Nora and Cullen are back from the other world. See the Red Summer special if you haven't read that already. Ma-Eda suspects something is up with one of them. And Blink is still badass. And this book's still cool. There are like 2 or 3 variant covers that I wish I had gone to the store and gotten. They're basically movie inspired ones. Like I think there's a Do the Right Thing looking cover. I want to say there's a Purple Rain one, but I'm not sure about that one. But there's a couple of variant covers that if you've seen my Twitter, I think I've retweeted from Sanford Green.
Sanford Green is a big fan of doing homages.
Yes.
For Bitterroot with yes. Moon Covers. I remember he did one with the famous image from Akira.
Yes. And that's still something. Like one of them is his. I think other people have done a couple of other variants also, but they're good. I kind of want
to. Yeah, he definitely did the Akira one.
So. Yeah. So if you get a chance to check those out, do so, because they look good stuff. I just didn't get a chance to go to the bookstore, to the comic book store, and see if either one of them had a. And if I had thought about it, I would have kind of ordered them before FOC and would have gotten them that way. But I didn't think about it. Anyway, so that's that. And finally, Deceased Unkillables number 1. I just basically said, hey, figured Jason Todd would be one of the ones that's still around. So this is a side story for the Deceased main story that happened last year, which now that I think about it, I should really bring that up during year end stuff. Yes, folks, that is still on the table. And he kind of does something messed up, but it's Jason Todd. But if you think about his history and what happened to him, you can kind of figure out what it entails. On the other side of that, Vandal Savage kind of gathers a team of villains, including Deathstroke and his daughter Ravager in tow, because of his immunity to the virus at hand. To what end, we shall see, because I think this is like, I don't know how many issues this is, but there's a couple more issues going on. And we find Jason Todd, Cassandra Cain, and Jim Gordon holed up with a bunch of kids somewhere. And that, folks, is it for me. We go get to Clicks of the Week.
Clicks of the Week. And I have so much to choose from this week.
Yes, you do. I mean, I don't know how you can stand it. Well, we already got two from our colleagues that are not here. And while I type this in, I will say that one of them is The Plunge, number one, from Dirt. That is his pick. That is apparently a number one from the Joe Hill imprint from DC Comics.
Right, this is the horror imprint.
Yeah, he didn't say anything else about it, but he just said that that's pretty much was his pick.
Right, he mentioned that it was probably the first book in the series of books that have been put out under this imprint that seemed to caught his eye, so that's a good thing.
Well, yeah, sure. Yeah, there's that, yeah. Like that, and just like I said, it was like I had heard good things from other people or one of the other books, but I don't read it. I haven't read any of those, so I couldn't tell you one way or the other. And from Tim, actually, Deceased Unclubbables number one was his click of the week.
All right.
So there is that. Now I'll just go ahead and say mine because I already know it. All right. New Mutants number seven. Surprise, surprise, because I pretty much said that earlier without actually saying it.
Right. So I'll go with Valkyrie Jane Foster number eight, because it was just a lot of fun and it was a nice jumping on point for new readers and a nice start for the new writing team.
Yes. So there you go.
Nice. All right.
All nice and neat. Now we will get to the Cinematic News, but first an ad read, please, sir.
Our first ad read of the night is for Wink Wines, the personalized wine club. Wink is a world of wine delivered right to your door. From rosé to cabernet to torrente, Wink has over 100 styles of wine to discover. Ever try an orange wine? Yep. Wink connects you to a world of exclusive wines tailored to your tastes and delivered directly to your door. Wink delivers 4 bottles of wine to you every month with free shipping. You can pick your own bottles or let Wink choose and match to your taste. It doesn't cost a thing to become a member, and you can skip or cancel anytime. And now the listeners of the Comic Book Chronicles can enjoy an exclusive discount of $20 off your first order. To place your first order with $20 off and to help keep our show free for you, go to our network website at cspn.us/wink. That's cspn.us/WINC. Wink Wines through CSPN. Do it today. And now, the news.
And as we start off, like we do every week, with the cinematic news, and I get my pages back together again. There we go. Robert Pattinson's costume from The Batman looks influenced by the Arkham games. And when this picture kind of came out, people were like, there was speculation and all kind of whispers and jokes left and right about this thing. So,
yeah, you got to fold in the second story too, because that's the one that I read.
Yes.
I read about that during the week.
Yes. So if you're watching the video, you can see a picture of the chess piece in particular. Kind of does look like the barrels of a gun that was basically made into the bat symbol. So like I said, people kind of had fun with that during the course of this week. And of course, like I said, the bat symbol, yeah, like the second story basically it says is yeah, what I just said. So actually, but yeah, so I'm trying to remember because the first article, yeah, because I'm from what I remember of the Arkham games, that's like Arkham City, Arkham Knight, and Arkham Asylum games. I can't remember, his suit was kind of more metallic kind of armor. It's not necessarily like the later movies, but there is something to that. And I get, and I can kind of see how, yeah, that feels like that was the inspiration for the suit. I mean, maybe, and it probably directly was, because I mean, who knows what Matt Reeves is thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's cool looking, but so if it is, you know, if that is the case, and I feel like those are going to come out and just going to turn into another Batarang or something, but I don't know why would you do that? So, but yeah, that's cool.
Alrighty, next up. So the current DC movie that's in theaters that I have not seen. How about you?
Nope, not yet.
So the Birds of Prey movie happens to deliver the DCEU's best fight scene, period. Good for them. Will it drive me to go see it in the movie theater? Probably not, but that's great to know that that fight scene is there to be watched.
I have seen like a clip of it, and actually it does, from a little I've seen of it, actually looks pretty cool, or pretty fun at the very least. So we'll see. Something for next week. But yeah, so I haven't done it yet, and we'll see how that goes if I ever get to see it while it's in theaters. Next up, Supergirl's 100th episode photo welcomes a new Mr. Mitzelplek to the Arrowverse. It says Thomas Lennon will play the extra dimensional imp in the upcoming milestone episode. He replaces season 2's guest star Peter Gadoit, who previously portrayed the reality-bending character. In the episode title, It's a Super Life, Mitzelplek offers to allow Kara to change her own history by revealing her secret identity to Lena Luthor before she discovered the truth from her brother Lex. Kara quickly discovers there are significant consequences to altering the paths, such as tropes like that demand. So, cool.
Alrighty. Next up. Ready?
I'll take it, yeah.
Alrighty. Superman and Lois may welcome a classic DC character back to the Arrowverse. So a classic character from the Superman comics may be coming back to the Arrowverse, as the script for the pilot episode of Superman and Lois allegedly features the return of Morgan Edge. And my reaction to this was, a classic character? I mean, seriously?
Who?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that name too, because I keep thinking about it. I was like, wait, wasn't that the person who Wonder Woman killed in that one event after Ted Kord died? But I don't know.
Oh, that's somebody else, I think.
Yeah, I know, probably. But like I said, that's the only thing I can think of. Yeah. So, regardless. And that was also another article, which I think I forgot to put in here, but that's fine. That apparently they are going to kill off a major character in the first episode of this show.
Okay.
From what the article said. And I'm thinking, I'm like, it's probably going to be Jimmy Olsen. Or either that is going to be the chief from the Data Planet. Who knows? I don't know. I didn't actually read the article. I pulled it, but I didn't read it. And obviously, since I didn't put it in here, then whatever. Mm-hmm. Next up, though, WandaVision may be set inside an Infinity Stone, but not the one you think. And yeah, rumors, folks. Rumors, rumors, rumors.
I heard a rumor.
So yeah, and this article basically speculates, you know, everything around that and which stone it could be and blah, 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 this and that and the other. So yeah, there you go. We'll find out if that's actually true. Next up.
All right. More I heard of rumor stuff is that according to some person online,
all right,
the time traveling villain Kang the Conqueror is rumored to appear in the Loki Disney Plus series. The series is expected to deal with time travel and introduce the Time Variance Authority, an organization that Kang was once a member of in the comics.
So, yeah, ever branching the MCU, as it were, I guess, if that actually comes to pass. She-Hulk casting breakdown indicates a comic accurate origin story, apparently. As Marvel Studios expands the MCU on Disney Plus, a casting description from its planned She-Hulk series reveals new detail. Please don't make it be Ronda Rousey. About the eponymous superhero's origins. The series is searching for a woman aged 26-34 with no race specified to portray its lead character, Jennifer Walters. Just like her comic book origin in 1987, She-Hulk number one by Stan Lee and John Buscema, the character is a lawyer who gains superpowers after receiving a gamma-radiated blood transfusion from her cousin, Bruce Banner. Here's Bruce Banner, joined by camera. Anyway, it is unclear if Mark Ruffalo will reprise his MCU role as Banner, but the mention of his character and Ruffalo's public interest in returning to the MCU hints at his continued involvement. Of course, he's also going out there saying, said something that there was a job at Disney World, and it was like, is this an open call? Because I need work. So he's...
Oh, no.
Which was kind of funny, so I don't know. That Ruffalo, such as a jokester, or is he? I doubt it. Anyway, that's that. Next up,
pre-production continues on that same She-Hulk series for Disney Plus with a new report. Another, I heard a rumor listing a familiar face from the Marvel Cinematic Universe appearing in a radically different role. That is one General Thaddeus Thunderbolt Ross, but instead of his Air Force dress uniform, you will see him in a red Gamma Hulk skin.
I wonder if that's actually going to happen and whether they're going to actually get William Hurt to do that.
It's a rumor.
Yeah, I know. So, I know. We'll see. Red Hulk, not very necessary. I don't know. That's just me. Anyway, some interesting news to me personally. Isaiah Bradley cast for Disney Plus's Falcon and Winter Soldier, according to a report. And will be possibly the character of Isaiah Bradley will possibly be played by Mantis, a.k.a. The voice of longtime Martian Manhunter voice actor and veteran actor Carl Lumbly. And I thought I saw something online. I don't know how if this is the case, but I saw something online that may be a rumor that... It was speculated that Falcon, you know, after getting the shield, declines it. But after finding out the history of Isaiah Bradley, decides to take up the mantle, which kind of would be a cool story if they lean into that. But we don't know. Like I said, all that's rumors is just something I saw online. And it could also be coming from something from Truth, Red, White, and Black. The story from Marvel Comics, which is good. You should read it.
I have it.
I've read it. I don't remember. I'm probably due for a rereading. But yeah. So there is that. We'll see if that comes to pass when, officially in a few months when this show comes out. Next up.
All right. Next up. All right. Deadline reports that actress. Deacon Lockman has joined Jurassic World 3 in an undisclosed role. You'll recognize her from Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., where she played Jiang, the mother of Chloe Bennett's Daisy. Okay.
Yep. And she also played Roulette in Supergirl, which also, you know, okay. But she's also played in other stuff, apparently. So, it says here, she's not the only one who will be coming to Jurassic World, as DeWanda Wise is also going to be in it, and Mabudu Athi. I'm not sure who that last person is, but I've heard DeWanda Wise before because I believe she was a front runner for she was supposed to be Monica Rambeau at one point. So yeah, cool. Next up. Eternals actor reveals first gay superhero couple in the MCU. So the Eternals is set to be the first MCU movie with a gay superhero in the main cast. But for a long time, that hero's identity was under wraps. Now Eternals actor Haz Sleeman has spilled the beans, revealing that he plays the husband of Brian Tyree Henry's character Fastos. Previously, there was a widespread speculation that the gay character would be the lead, Richard Madison's Icarus. And I think we've also probably speculated that as so. So speaking to New Now Next, Sleeman said, "We represent a gay family and have a child. This lines up with earlier reports that the film would feature a gay superhero with a husband and child, and that Marvel was looking to cast an openly queer actors or actors." Sleeman came out as gay in 2017. So, cool.
Alrighty, next up. Apparently, the MCU logo had contained an image of two kissing heroes that had been, the image had been captured from a Marvel Comics panel. And although their identities were the subject of a recent Quora question, we find out that Marvel Studios had these characters in their logo, but they only recently gained the rights to these characters held by 21st Century Fox because they are mutants. And those two kissing characters are in fact Justice, aka Vance Astro, and Firestar, aka Angelica Jones.
Yes. Which
aka Angelica Jinx. Shout out to Spider-Man and his amazing friends.
I was about to say, wow, that's a pull. Yeah, exactly. oh man, I need to watch more of that.
Time to pull it back up on Disney Plus after that first go around, ladies and gentlemen.
You know, right? Good stuff that is. So yeah,
speaking of Disney Plus, we all know what's coming out tomorrow.
Oh yes. We'll get to that. We'll get to that in a minute.
That's why I didn't jump right into it.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But yeah, so I almost went to pull up a movie and look at the logo, or look at the logo treatment they did for it, because I don't remember seeing this, or maybe I do and I just kind of glanced over it, because I feel like I don't remember seeing them kiss, but maybe I haven't, I just don't remember. So either way, it is out there. There you go. Booyah. Next up, Chris Pratt and Tom Holland want to start an Avengers cast Dungeons and Dragons party.
Oh, wow. I mean, listen, they play fantasy football together. They might as well do something like this, too.
Wait, do they?
Yeah.
Huh. I did not know that part. But, I mean, you know, the D&D, the celebrity D&D wave is high, so it's not a surprise. I don't know. I can't see half of that crew doing that, but you know, Holland, maybe Pratt, maybe.
But they are all actors, and that is what this entails.
True. But again, I mean, I don't know, Robert Downey Jr.
You never know.
I don't know. I mean, Ruffalo, maybe actually. Hemsworth, sure. I don't know. Like I said, some of those folk. ScarJo, I don't know. But I think I want to say
Asian character. Oh no! Shots fired.
So sad. I don't know. I would seeing Chris Evans. I'm sure a lot of people would love to see Chris Evans in that particular situation. But yeah. So speaking to IGN at Disney's Pixar's Onward world premiere, Holland was asked if he has ever played D&D before. While he never has, he did give fans of Earth's Mightiest Heroes a reason to cheer. And he says, I haven't, no, but Chris and I have been talking about setting up an Adventures D&D session, Holland said, which would be amazing. We actually want to, like, film it because it would be really fun. Not live stream it because I don't do... Is this live? It's live. Okay, I'm really stressed now. So basically it sounds like it's a Peter Parker character.
That's funny.
So, yeah. I don't know. We'll see if that ever happens. Maybe they get the Russo brothers to film it, who are also fans of D&D. So we'll see how that works out. Next up, which I'm right kind of glad you got this one.
This story. Oh, so tempted. I don't know if the raffle period is over.
I think, but I sent this to you.
What's that?
I think I sent this to you already.
Right. I definitely did see it, and I was very tempted to plunk down some money because Chris Evans was raffling a screen-used Captain America shield with certificate of authenticity for a girls' leadership charity. Let's see. So this is for the charity Girl Powerful, an organization that describes its mission as giving girls the tools to develop a strong sense of self. What was the deadline? I remember it was the lot when I read it, it was like 2 days away. So I don't know if the deadline was
exactly today at midnight.
At the time snap.
The time of this recording, February 20th at midnight.
Oh, snap. I mean, it's like, whatchamacallit? You know, it's one of those lotteries where the more money you put in, just like, you know, a raffle, you put, you know, the more money you put in, the more tickets you get, the more entries you get. So,
right. So you still got a whole clean hour.
Exactly. I've got an hour to put in like maybe 10 bucks or something just for a shot at it.
If he got that shit, we would never see the end of it. He'd be like, hey, it'd be like every shot.
Here's my certificate of authenticity, yo.
It'd be like, it would be his picture. We wouldn't see a picture of him. It'd just be a picture of the shield like right there. Or actually, it'd be a cutting shot to him, to the shield on the spotlights. Or behind him, because if you're watching the video, you can see his setup.
I think it's midnight Pacific, because it's set up and it says that there's 4 hours left to win.
Okay, yeah, because it doesn't say what time zone in this.
Yep.
But,
yep. So I think it's midnight Pacific. So I actually do have a little time. Let's see. So for $10, I get 100 entries. For $1,000, I get 50,000 entries.
Plenty. You got that.
Let's not talk about that. We all got bills to pay.
I know. Yeah. So yeah, we'll see how that turns out for Agent 70 in the next couple of weeks.
That's tempting. I think I may go have to get my wallet after this.
But anyway, and plus it's a good charity regardless.
Of course.
So, you know.
Of course.
Next up. Now here's where we get to what we alluded to earlier, basically.
Yeah!
Disney Plus celebrates Clone... Excuse me. Disney Plus celebrates Clone Wars premiere with handy Star Wars timeline. And yes, folks, at the time of this recording, we are just one day away from Star Wars The Clone Wars Season 7.
That's so awesome.
I know. I am still doing my rewatch and I'm still like very early on, but I figure because me and somebody else was talking about this, I'm like, probably by the time that I finish, by the time they finish, I don't know. I'm not sure how many episodes it's going to be, but I know by the time I'm finished, it should at the very least be four or five episodes in, I would imagine, at this point, because I'm still in season one, but I'm taking my time because Clone Wars is really so good. Also, though, you know, the way you have to watch it, the first season's kind of broken up, so you kind of got to skip around, and that's including the movie, which I just finished watching like a couple of days ago, and got into the first couple of proper season one episodes. So, yeah. Yeah, but back to this timeline, you can see that off of Disney Plus's Twitter page, the timeline of, in fact, I just put it up, if you're watching the video, you can see the whole timeline here. It goes through the prequels, Clone Wars is in there, Solo, Rebels, which Rebels, technically, I also finished my Rebels rewatch for those who didn't know that.
about time.
I might have mentioned that last week. I can't remember, though. Man.
It's about bloody time.
And just like I said on Twitter, I'm like, you know, if they chose to, which I heard rumors that they could, or that they were going to, if they were going to continue that plot that they left off on, I wouldn't mind it. But at the same time, like if they left it there, I'm cool with it because that person was going to be all right. The people that I was concerned about are still around, with the exception of maybe Kanan. But oops, spoilers.
Hey, Freddie Prinze Jr. is going to be fine.
He's going to be fine. Yeah, he's still getting chicks. So checks. Well, he's got his one check. Shout out to the Vampire Slayer. Ha! But yeah, it goes into that New Hope and the original trilogy, the Star Wars Rogue One, Mandalorian, and of course the sequels, and including Resistance, which apparently spans all three of the sequels for only being two seasons. So that's kind of interesting. Okay. Yeah. And I know Rebels ends like after technically ends after Return of the Jedi, despite where they have it on this timeline, because it does start before A New Hope, because it's like the beginning of the rebellion. But
what's funny about that is that the end of the it's kind of like an epilogue,
right? It's basically a time skip at the end, so whether that counts or not, it is what it is. But I would imagine if they take it back up again, like it's rumored to be, they could probably change the timeline if they so choose.
Yep.
So, but yeah, I enjoyed it. The part that was kind of sad, you know, was what it was. Oh no, let's not look at the comments because I'm pretty sure somebody's saying something stupid.
Right. Next up, Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker heads home next month on home video.
Mm-hmm. So, hey, get that shelf space ready. Get those digital orders out the way. It says here the release will include several bonus featurettes covering everything from the creation of D.O., Agent 70's favorite.
Oh, God, stupid. Droid.
The movie's cute new droid buddy to the filming of the speeder chase sequence on Pasana.
All the lame.
And perhaps most interesting of all, given the, let's diplomatically say, drama that has swirled around Rise since this is the author saying this, a future length documentary about the making of the film called The Skywalker Legacy. So. We shall see. Okay. And if you're watching the video, you can see that there's a box set also about to come out, which has everything, all of the movies.
In their new format.
Yep. Sadly, not theatrical versions for the original trilogy, probably, because that still sucks. But the box set is good. It's got a little art book, it's got a book on it. It's almost like what they did with the James Bond box set.
Sure.
But it's more of a book form because I think that was just, well, actually, I can't find it right now, so I'm not even going to look. But, basically, it's got all the discs and all the bonus materials and a book with a bunch of stuff in it and some letter. I'm not sure what that letter is, but regardless. And it's probably like $1,000.
Maybe not that much.
I mean, yes, it's a little hyperbolic, but it's going to be at the very least probably, let's say 150 at best.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you don't already have all of the movies or you just, you know, crazy like that, it'll be out there for you.
Yeah. I mean, I have the prequels still on DVD only. So
I want to say I do too, actually. But I mean, hell, they're all done in digital, so the quality is still halfway decent. I don't know if I would pop for Blu-ray copies of those.
Right.
We'll see. I don't know.
Already have Disney Plus, so
there is that, and I would honestly, like I said, I would totally get this if I knew the theatrical version of the original trilogy was going to be there.
I think they would be sold out if that was the case.
That would also be the case, but I know that is still in out there somewhere. Anyway, next up,
all I need from the prequels is Anakin. It's over, Anakin. I have the high ground.
That has been coming up a few different times lately.
all I need. All Wait, right.
So did you see the video? I think I told you.
I was about to say, I think this is your story, actually.
No. I'm still on the last one, what you just said.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
There was a video out there where someone overdubbed that scene with the voices of Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck.
Oh, no.
Playing those two parts. It's pretty good. I don't know if you've seen it. If you hadn't seen it, I'll send you a link to it.
I saw a meme today. It made me laugh out loud. It was it replaced Anakin and Anakin and Obi-Wan with Padme and the medical droid at the end of Revenge of the Sith.
Oh no!
And the medical droid says, "I don't, you know, there's she's dying, but there's nothing medically wrong with you,
right?
With her." And Padme is superimposed on Anakin saying, "You underestimate my sadness." Of course. I started laughing. I could not help it.
That's pretty good. You know,
just sitting on the train with my phone, just started laughing.
That's pretty good.
Well, I might have actually been in my office just looking at my phone like a loser, not doing work.
Oh, stop it. Hey, yeah. At least you weren't on a work computer doing it. So
that's true enough.
All right, next up. But if y'all know the memes that we're just talking about, then hey, you know, laugh and enjoy. Anyway, Black Panther is coming to Disney Plus in March, which seems will be a little bit late considering it's February and it's Black History Month, and this would be the time
that right. But contract being what they are, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like the timing of that's a little off. And since the movie actually came out in February, so. But hey, it is what it is. Also, there's a couple other things that, at least movie wise.
Well, that means what I was just going to add is, you know, we all know, actually, maybe we don't all know that Black Panther has been streaming on Netflix this whole time. So
correct. Yeah. So that is still one of the ones that hasn't come over, including like Solo.
Right.
Hasn't come over yet, but definitely Force Awakens is on there.
Contractual obligations, ladies.
Yeah, Last Jedi is on there, excuse me, but not Solo yet, but I think that's coming fairly soon.
Right.
So, yeah.
Speaking of Netflix, Castlevania Season 3 has released a trailer that heralds a March 5th release on Netflix.
I still need to watch Season 2, but it looks badass.
I have not watched season one or two, but I have gotten recommendations on this.
Season one is really brief. It's like probably 30 minutes max, if that.
Okay.
Yeah. I think season two may be a little longer. Because, yeah, like I said, season one's episodes are real short, so you can blow through those easily. And I'm not sure about season two, because, like I said, I haven't watched them yet. But, yeah, there's highly anticipated Castlevania anime. Oh, season three will span 10 episodes. So there you go. Good stuff. I may actually go check that out this weekend. Not season three, but season two, because I hadn't done that. Mark Hamill's Skeletor headlines all-star Masters of the Universe Revelation cast. So this is...
You said OnStar. I was like, what? They lent his voice to OnStar, like the car thing?
Wouldn't that be cool? Well, first, I'm about to say, first of all, is OnStar even still around? Second of all, that'd still be kind of cool.
What's that?
I said, that'd still be kind of cool, but...
Right. I just heard you say OnStar. You know, you just misspoke, you know, meaning all-star, but yeah. I heard OnStar is
funny. Hey there, it's an all-star. Yes. So, yes, this is the Netflix new animated Masters of the Universe. Okay, it says here it won't likely air until 2021. I believe this is the Kevin Smith backed one.
I believe so.
Yes. And in fact, if you go through the rest of the list of the voice talent, which is Sarah Michelle Gellar, who we just alluded to a minute ago, Kevin Conroy. I mean, come on, who doesn't know who that is? Lena Headey.
I am the knight.
Exactly. Alicia Steele. excuse me.
Oh.
Lena Headey. It looks like there's a. Damn it, Newsarama, get your shit together.
It's Lena Headey.
Is it?
Yeah, it's not.
Are you sure? That's not Lena Headey?
Pretty sure.
Okay, well, fuck it. I'm wrong. Excuse me. Sorry.
No, I'm pretty sure Lena.
No. I just, as people saw, I just Googled it, so.
And, okay.
Yeah, so, okay, I was wrong. My apologies for Newsarama, but you do have typos a lot of times. Anyway, she's dope, though. Alicia Silverstone, Justin Long. Oh, Jesus, the Apple guy. And, of course, Jason Mewes.
So, Snoochie Boochies!
So if you did not know this was a Kevin Smith joint, you know it now.
Yes. Snoochie Boochies! Snickety Snicked!
Exactly. So yeah, does it say when? Oh, apparently a couple other people also. Chris Wood, let's see, Ben Headley, Hetty, I keep wanting to call her Stephen Root, Diedrich Bader, Tiffany Smith, huh, interesting. Henry Rollins.
Okay.
Susan Eisenberg. Okay, got Wonder Woman up in here. For Lamar, there you go. Tony Todd, Cree Summer, yep. Kevin, so basically the names of folks you know good and well would be, you know, yeah. Kevin, yeah, Michael.
Associated with several high-profile voice
actors. Exactly. Kevin Michael Richardson, Kevin, you have to say Kevin Conroy, and of course, Harley Quinn Smith, whom, if you didn't know, is his daughter.
Righto.
Yes. Yeah, no date outside of, looks like maybe possibly 2021 for this joint, so.
Alrighty.
We'll see when it gets there. Wait, hold on, back up. I need to, and it does say,
To have President Bartlett ask what's next, what's up?
No, I was about to say, I was going to see who Mark Hamill was going to play, but then I just remembered the title actually said, and it is indeed Skeletor, so yeah, that's, I can, right, see that. Totally see
Alrighty.
That.
Alrighty.
Next up.
What's next?
The Witcher Season 2 has cast two more Witchers running around in white hair wigs. Season 1 left Geralt and however that's pronounced.
Siri?
Mm-hmm. Because now my eye stuff is going
to start. I know, right? You just popped off a bunch of people's eye stuff, so congrats.
Exactly. So apparently two more actors have been added to the cast. Peaky Blinders is Paul Bullion and Dark Heart's Yasin Atur, who will be playing the Witchers known as Lambert and Cohen, respectively. Again, I ask
who
and
who,
respectively.
And I would probably go along with you, Judah, because the only other Witcher that I know from the video games is whose name's escaping me. Well, technically Ciri is a Witcher in training, but that's a whole nother story. so
yeah.
Cool, I guess. Yeah.
All right.
And these are from people from the books, obviously, so that's why, you know. Because the show is following the books, not the video game. Alan Tudyk's sci-fi comic adaptation of Resident Alien beams down first trailer. So Watch lives. Huh. Sci-Fi recently released a first look at the upcoming sci-fi comedy series starring Alan Tudyk, Resident Alien. The teaser gives the audience a good look at Tudyk's Harry Vanderspiegel, who introduced himself as a doctor and attempts to assure a suspicious human that he is not an alien. Which, as the trailer goes on to show, he most definitely is. And not to pick on Alan too, because he's, I love Wash. He absolutely does look like an alien. So there is that. So apparently this was Dark Horse Comics comic book from 2012 to 2018. I'd never heard of it before, but yeah. There you go. Next.
Alrighty, so we are transitioning into comic book news.
And before we get into that, I will say that, hey, May solicits for 2020 have been announced for a bunch of companies, including DC and Marvel.
Yep, time to take a look and see what you are pulling. So make sure you take a look at those solicitations and get down to your local comic shop and add to your pull list.
Sure. Batman, The Adventures Continue, digital series by Dini and Templeton will tie into the forthcoming Batman, the Animated Series action figures. So cool.
I mean, talk about getting back to the roots of cartoons selling selling toys, right?
I know, right? For decades, Batman anime series has been considered by many fans to be a definitive take on translating the Cape Crusaders to screen. And there's no doubt in that. Now DC is returning to the world of the classic cartoon and its follow-up series, The New Batman Adventures, with a 6-issue digital-first miniseries. As announced at EU.com, Batman The Adventure Continues will be written by Batman Animated Series producer Paul Dini and illustrated by Ty Templeton, artist on many a previous animated-style Batman story. Digital issues will be available in April, with physical copies following in May.
Okay.
So cool. I don't even care. You know what? I'm not even going to read the rest. Don't even care what it's about. I'll probably read it. next up.
As part of the DC May 2020 solicitations, we found out that DC's sometimes bad guy, Man Bat, our very own Dr. Kirk Langstrom, will return to the spotlight and to villainy in his own series in May.
Hmm. Batman Bat also showed up in Deceased Unkillables this week. So that was, yeah, there you go. On a side note, I don't know who was asking for a Batman, Man Bat series, but okay. I guess this is kind of a thing. This is where we are now, huh? You know, bad guys getting series. Sure. Next up, the charge toward DC's future begins in Generation One. DC will continue rolling out the details of its updated continuity timeline in a series of 5 numbered Generation One shots that showcase various eras of DC history following its free comic book day release, Generation Zero Gods Amongst Us. Okay, I'm about to say, wait, is this in the Injustice thing or what? Now, anyway, these 5 one shots will be written by a brain trust of. Oh, Jesus. Brian Michael Bendis, Dan Jurgens, Andy Schmidt, Robert Venditti, and Joshua Williamson, with art by Doug Mankey, Brian Hitch, Michael Janin, Ivan Reyes, David Marquez, and more. Kicking things off in May is Generation One, Age of Mysteries, from scripter Andy Schmidt and lead artist Doug Mankey. The 48-page one-shot will feature covers from Jim Chung, Gary Frank, and will focus on Golden Age characters such as Wonder Woman, Alan Scott. Wonder Woman, comma, Alan Scott, just because, you know, yeah. Jim Corrigan, Terry Sloan, and Lucius Fox, and Alfred, and many more, and more. So cool. That's the thing.
All right. DC has released an early look at one of several stories from the upcoming oversized Flash number 750, which resumes the original title's numbering and is due out February 26, which is next week. The early look was at a Silver Age style Flash story by writer Marv Wolfman and artist Riley Rossmo. So it's a Silver Age style Barry Allen story.
I was about to say, I knew that artwork looked familiar because it's the same artist that did that, just did the Martian Manhunter series.
Alrighty.
Yeah. By the way, that last story kind of feels like the Marvel history of the Marvel Universe books that. Just finished coming out, but you know, we'll see what happens with that. Next up, DC celebrates Green Lantern's 80th anniversary with a 100-page spectacular. To celebrate 80 years of Green Lantern, DC has announced Green Lantern 80th anniversary 100-page super spectacular number one rolls straight up off the tongue, which pays tribute to Alan Scott, Hal Jordan, Jon Stewart, Guy Gardner, Kyle Rayner, Jessica Cruz, Simon Bass, and anyone who else who's ever deemed worthy enough to sport a green power ring, which I think they pretty much did both of them, with the exception of, I mean, they pretty much covered everybody with the exception of Teen Lantern and Sojourner, who are newer. But anyway, the issue will be written and illustrated by a murderer's row. Okay, settle down. of DC talent, including Jeff Johns, Daryl Banks, Charlotte Fullerton, McDuffie, Cindy Grace, Mike Grell. I won't go through the whole list, but a whole bunch of other people. So, and a bunch of variants will be coming along with that. If you're watching the video, you can see me scrolling through a bunch of them. Screw Gary Gardner, by the way.
One punch.
I know, right? Exactly. One punch. Fans of Justice League International should know where that comes from. But anyway, let's see. The book will be presented in prestige format and priced at $9.99, and it will go on sale May 20th. So fans of Green Lantern, rejoice.
Alrighty.
Probably will not be showing the movie version.
Okay. Next up, in May's DC solicitations, we find out that the current volume of Supergirl is going to come to an end in May with number 42, as revealed in said solicitations.
Which seemingly lasts longer than since I've expected it to be. Okay. Normally they would be. I'm saying that not because it doesn't deserve to live, but saying that, let's face it, there are idiots out there, and books like this don't really get a chance to breathe that often.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that this lasts this long is great. I'm trying to remember if I actually read it enough. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter. So yeah, there is that. That's the thing. Bat Family is treating Jason Todd horribly after Alfred's death. This is kind of spoilerish for Batman
Pennyworth special,
which I still hadn't read, so I'm just going to say, hey, okay. Yeah, whatever happened in that book happened.
It's okay. It's nothing, you know.
And it's probably nothing out of order, because it's Jason Todd. You know, who cares what Jason treats him bad?
Yeah. Alrighty, next up, Batman Miniatures game reveals a Back to Gotham edition. So Night Models has launched the third edition. There's already been two editions of this.
Apparently.
Third edition of their hit Batman Miniatures game, and fans who want to give it a try can get everything they need in one handy box. Okay.
If you are watching the video, you can see the contents of said box, and it looks kind of elaborate. There's a big box, there's a bunch of little miniatures, there's a Ferris wheel with the Joker's face on it, and some other, looks like a Ferris type paraphernalia, some cards, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, interesting. Next up, Marvel's baddies are getting their own villainous game. So... you may have heard us talking about a game called, I can't remember what it is. That's great. Anyway, the villains are entering the multiverse. IO9 can exclusively reveal that Villainous, the card-based board game starring Disney's evildoers, is heading into some other is heading into some other familiar territory with Marvel Villainous. The latest addition to the now expanding franchise features some Marvel standout baddies, as well as new gameplay rules that set it apart from its main Disney counterparts. Ravensburger has given us the first look at... So basically, let's see. Hela, Thanos, and Ultron looks like are going to be three of the five villains that you could play as in with this board game. I've heard a lot of good things about the Disney version of Villainous, and I've yet to play it because it's, you know, say it with me. I won't go any further, but I hear good things. That's all I would say. So having a Marvel version seems like it might be all right.
Okay.
Next up.
What are we on? That is okay. The Mandalorian's The Child gets new toys, including an animatronic figure. So better late than never for lots of fans of The Child from The Mandalorian, otherwise known as Baby Yoda. But yeah, now that the proverbial embargo has been lifted on products, we're getting a deluge of Baby Yoda products.
Right, because some would say they underestimated the appeal of Baby Yoda and slept on it for a while, but now they are going full deluge. Okay, that's enough of that. If you are watching the video, you saw the video of the commercial playing. And if you're not watching the video and heard the audio, that was neither one of us.
Okay.
Yes. Next up, Union Jack heads up Marvel's newest UK super team, which I saw a joke online saying that they should have heroes from places Britain's colonized as a team, which I'm like, oh, that's cold. That's real cold. Marvel has announced a new super team, the Union, protectors of the UK, because apparently Excalibur is not enough. And yeah.
Okay.
That is me editorializing. Few details of the new series launching in May have been announced. Marvel's release only included an RB Silva drawn image of the team's roster, headed up by Union Jack, and the creative team of Paul Grist and artist Andrea DeVito. The rest of the roster, mostly appearing to be new characters, has not been named. And yeah, I don't know any of these. There's no Faiza Hussein, so I care even less. Next up.
Okay.
And apparently this might be tied into Empire, so that makes some sense. Next up.
Next up, Jerry Duggan teases a heated Cyclops and Emma Frost interaction in the pages of Cable. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, apparently there was a tweet sent out and telling retailers to log into Diamond to read something off of some preview pages, I would imagine, of the first issue with some nodal art, which I would love to get my hands on that. But hey, I'm sure it'll be... Yeah. And Duggan puts out a picture of Emma Frost talking to Cyclops, who looks like he's eating a sandwich. So, okay. Yeah. So, who knows where that's going. But yeah, apparently Cable's going to get his own book. And yeah. Next up, Jonathan Hickman clarifies X-Men's Professor X Phantom X confusion. Because I believe, as we have talked about, with that giant-sized Phantom X, that he was, in fact, in possession of Phantom X's body, I guess. Something or other. I don't know. But regardless, that this article goes into saying what Hickman says about that. Next up.
Alrighty. Next up. Spoiler alert. Iceman shows why he's an old I jumped over because I heard Hickman. Okay, I missed it. Hickman deconstructs Jean Grey versus Emma Frost telepathy. Why is that important?
I'm sure there's going to be a story beat in this. Come on. And yeah, I guess it goes into other, you know, the differences of other telepaths like Xavier and Monet, who's, I don't know, whatever, and Gene or whatever. So, but that's basically just like that last article because it was coming from the same source anyway. Now, if you want to go ahead and use this one, go for it.
Fine.
Which we kind of sort of talked over because you hadn't read this yet, but yeah.
Iceman shows why he's an Omega level mutant wild card. So, what is this, in this week's issue?
This week's issue of Marauders. He gets into some stuff.
Cool.
Yeah, that, like, huh, I didn't think he could do that with his powers, but apparently he could. So, yeah, that's interesting. That was a crazy part. J.J. Abrams' final two Spider-Man issues face a huge delay. Who even cares? Spider-Man
number four. Hold on.
I mean, you know, as we've said before, or may have said before, I don't know. It's J.J. Abrams, and yes, this is his son project also, but at the same time, it's J.J. Abrams, and he's probably busy making a movie or running another project. Let me stop. That's not nice. That's not nice. It's not even true. I was about to say something really nasty, but he's probably working on something. He's working on another movie or something else or whatever it may be, and therefore it took, you know, his main bread and butter taken him away from this project, which is why this is delayed. Similar things happened with Fallen Angels, because Brian Edward Hill had to go through some actual other work.
Okay.
But yes, Spider-Man number 4 was originally solicited to hit shelves on December 11th, but was previously pushed back to February 19th. Now it's once again been pushed back for an April 8th release date. And April 5th summarily is being moved to April 15th. I'm sorry, to May 27th. So, okay. Next.
All right. Chicken, Spider-Man, and Kessel and Johnson's Avengers join Marvel's Snapshots lineup. So this is starting next month and continuing through June. Marvel's Snapshots will be a bi-monthly series consisting of 8 standalone issues, offering unusual viewpoints on some of your favorite Marvel heroes. This is the series that's curated by Kurt Busiek with iconic painted covers by Alex Ross.
Hmm. Have you ever read Marvel's?
Of course. I have a signed hardcover by Ross and Busiek.
Have you read Marvel's X?
No.
Oh, okay. I feel like I've read a little bit of Marvel's, but I don't think I ever finished it. So I'm like, okay, it looks good. And I'm not sure what, you know, where this was going, but
right.
Sure. Next up, anyway, just curious. Marvel teaser promises a mysterious Marvel-made surprise very soon. Fans who headed to their nearest comic book stores on Wednesday will have a surprise waiting for them. I guess that would be of a couple of days ago, or excuse me, of yesterday, rather. Courtesy of Marvel Comics, the publisher has sneakily hidden a teaser for something called Marvel-Made, with its unveiling slated for an unspecified date this month. The image of the teaser features a red cloth laying over what looks to be a table or some other kind of flat surface. The front of the cloth has the Marvel Made logo printed on it, with the words "Unveiling February 2020" found on the bottom of the teaser. Yeah, who knows what that could be, but I guess Tim speculates that it could be, first assumption that it has to do with the upcoming comic book announcement, perhaps a new series or upcoming blockbuster event, and so he also says that Marvel is also promoting its spring early summer event, Empire, that brings the Avengers and Fantastic Four together to thwart an invasion for a united Kree and Skull Empires. So, who knows? Guess we'll find out at some point. Did you see this in your store, or did you even go to your store this week?
Not yet.
Okay. So if you do see it, let us know. Snap a picture. Next up.
All right. Marvel evokes one more day for the May Daredevil special. Oh, no.
Yeah, exactly. When I saw this, I said the exact same thing. I'm like, why do this to the man? He's gone through enough.
Seriously.
So, yeah. Your boy's his dog. He's about to put him through it, apparently.
He's been doing that. So
well, yeah. So, and I guess it's going to be in Daredevil Annual #1, a 40-page one-shot in which everything changes, and that's not just empty hype, he says. Of course, it's Zdarsky, so you never know what the guy says a lot of things. Next up, Mark Waid named Humanoids publisher, which just reminded me of a book I totally forgot to get to this week from that company. Humanoids has named Mark Waid as publisher to oversee creative editorial marketing and sales, as well as new inroads with retailers and librarians. Per the announcement, Waid has worked with Humanoids since 2018 when he was hired as director of creative development. Now, here's what I'm trying to skip to and find out is, does this have anything to do with his other works with, say, like Marvel, whoever? Because I'm pretty sure he's still writing Doctor Strange. So I'm wondering if and or when is this going to affect that. Okay, crickets. Never mind. Next
up. Yeah, I'm just like, okay.
Well, I mean, you know, you get something like that. That seems like a conflict of interest. So,
what are we on, Dark Horse?
Yes.
All right, Dark Horse gives The Legend of Korra: Ruins of the Empire the Library Edition treatment. Cool.
Okay. Apparently, 870 is ready to go. So, So, yeah, that's the thing. It'll be out September 9th, 2020, with a wide release September 29th. Retails for $40, 240 pages. Hey, fans of Legend of Korra will be pleased, I'm sure. I haven't watched the series yet, so I don't know. New Spider-Man ongoing by a reunited Joe Kelly and Chris Bachalo coming later this year. And to which I said to myself, again? which I recognize that there's only one ongoing in Spider-Man series right now, but there's also been a lot of Spider-Man books. Frequent collaborators Joe Kelly and Chris Bacalo are reuniting for a new Spider-Man ongoing anticipated to launch this June. Announced as a part of Marvel Comics' presentation at this week's Comics Pro annual meeting in Portland. Nonstop Spider-Man will be, according to Kelly, relentless, which makes me kind of groan. And I quote, Nonstop Spider-Man is, for me, this is Joe Kelly talking, the best of what Marvel Comics can be. Relentless action, epic storytelling, mind-melting art, and relevant themes, all grounded by the heart and soul of one of my favorite, all-time favorite characters, Spider-Man, Kelly said in the announcement. Chris and I want to redline your adrenaline and shatter your hearts, giggling the whole way. Please sign your waivers and gather your safety gear of choice before issue one comes out. I truly cannot wait for this. Buckle up, Tigers. Which, again, makes me kind of groan. I believe this is the same Joe Kelly who also said a few years ago, right before or right at the beginning of his creative-owned comic, he did that. He had quote-unquote cracked the Spider-Man code. We will see if all this he just said will live up to it, if anybody chooses to read it. I don't know. Probably will, because, you know, people are stupid. Anyway, next up, I don't think we needed another Spider-Man book. That's just me.
Deadpool is coming to Fortnite for all you guys that and ladies that play Fortnite as a new character skin this upcoming season.
Hey, whatever. Lifer was hyped about it. Which, going to the next story, Rob Liefeld unveils first Snake Eyes comic book art because she's doing that Snake Eyes book. The Deadpool creator teases a Mission Impossible style story for the G.I. Joe character. I mean, arguably this is a good character for him because it's got a lot of pockets.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Pouches.
Yeah. But he said something on Twitter, which I pulled up here, that kind of has me worried. And I'm reading too much on this because his tweet says, "You guys have been missing me on Deadpool. Join me in June on Snake Eyes." And I'm sitting here like, wait, are you going to give Snake Eyes the Deadpool treatment? Which, like I said, that was me kind of freaking out about it. And I'm like, nah, that's not exactly what it is, hopefully. Because no, don't do Snake Eyes like that. If you're going to do that, get him off this book. Anyway. That's me editorializing, because, yeah. Next up.
Last but not least, IDW is launching three new original series this May. Chained to the Grave, Sea of Sorrows, and Bermuda, alongside the return of a fan-favorite adventurer with Kanto and the Clockwork Fairies. Good for IDW.
Yes. Getting some books out there. Hey, if that's not licensed. That sounds like a slam, but it kind of isn't really. But anyway, cool. And I guess that is it, folks. One more ad read, please, sir.
Our last ad read of the night. Even though I'm tired, I know I would normally switch to the quick one, but I'm going with Funko. Fun at first sight. Your home for exclusive collectibles such as their world famous pop vinyl bobbleheads, apparel including t-shirts, hats, and socks, and brand merchandise such as custom DIY pop figures, art books, and skateboards. And now the listeners of the Comic Book Chronicles can enjoy 10% off your entire purchase when shopping at Funko. To place your order, your first order with 10% off, and to help keep our show free for you, go to our network website at cspn.us. That's cspn.us. Then click on the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down to the Funko link and place your order. When you get to the checkout, put in the offer code SHOP10 for your 10% off discount. Funko through cspn.us. Do it today.
Apparently, because it's anime month, they have a bunch of anime figures, including some from Evangelion. So, yay.
Okay.
And that, folks, brings us to the end of another exciting episode of this here Comic Book Chronicles. Let us say goodbye to Agent 70 as he rests his weary brain for another hard day in the trenches in Gotham. But for myself, Roddy Cat. You can find me at Roddy Cat on Twitter. Also, you can find me at News Nice Need on Twitter and CB Caps on Instagram. Agent underscore 70 on Twitter and Instagram. PC underscore dirt on Twitter, Pop Culture Net on Twitter, popculturenetwork.com, and Byte on CMCRVWS. Tim, DOGG98 on Twitter, The Click Nation on Twitter, TheClickNation.com. That's DKLIQNATION. CB Cron, which is the Comic Book Chronicles Twitter account, and Comic Book Resources, where he is over there writing his face off. And you can find this podcast on the Coastal of the Podcast Network. That's CESPN.us.
Do it today.
You can also find this here podcast on the podcast for the place of choice, whether it be Google Play, Apple iTunes, Spotify, and the Cold Slither and or the Cold Slither Podcast Network's SoundCloud page. We will be back next week. Yes, because movie protocol will not be in effect. Just it not might yet. Not be when it, and probably if we're honest with ourselves, may not be when it does come around to that.
Until May.
Yeah. Wait. Isn't I thought
Black Widow is out in May.
Okay, I thought it was before that.
It could be. I'm very sleepy. So
yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. I was thinking it was before that. Regardless, we'll let you know on social medias, one way or the other, of that development, and more than likely before. Because we will still have at least another week or so or more before that. With that, Animal Crossing comes out in another month. I cannot wait. That has nothing to do with anything, but I'm just going to say it anyway. This has been the Comic Book Chronicles. Peace.
Peace. One, enjoy Clone Wars season, what is it, 7?
7.
Yeah.
I love it when a plan comes together.
7.
It's Dr. Doom.
What's on your evil mind?
Hold your insulting tongue and mock my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?